Welcome to the Food for Thought podcast. I'm Andy Hanasek, senior editor of Food Processing Magazine. Having recently retired from her role as chief strategy and brand officer for Bon Appetit Management Company, Macy Gansler still has a special place in her heart for helping the food and beverage industry reach its sustainability potential. Gansler remains a strategic advisor for Bon Appetit, but she has also published a book titled You Can't Market Manure at Lunchtime and Other Lessons from the Food Industry for Creating a More Sustainable Company. In conjunction with the release of the book this week, Gansler joins the Food for Thought podcast to discuss how processors can better communicate their sustainability initiatives and achievements, avoiding greenwashing, and improving their image, as well as the trust their customers and consumers have in their brands. I hope you enjoy this episode of the podcast. Macy, thanks so much for joining me today here on our Food for Thought podcast. We're really excited to speak about sustainability and get your perspective on where the industry is. Specifically, we're going to talk specifically about the idea of greenwashing. And, you know, we can talk about a million things when it comes to food and beverage sustainability. But I think greenwashing is a topic that I really wanted to investigate and get your insights on for this particular episode. So, but before we jump into that, why don't you introduce yourself, give our listeners a bit of a background of where you've come from, what you're up to nowadays, and why sustainability in food and beverage has been and is important to you.
Thanks, Andy. It's a lot of fun to be here. I have just retired from my role as Chief Strategy and Brand Officer for Bon Appetit Management Company, still serving as a strategic advisor for the company, which is has an important place in my heart, having been there for so long and done such great work with really cool people. Bon Appetit is a food service management company providing cafe and catering services to three markets, private colleges, corporate headquarters, and museums and cultural institutions across 33 states, serves about 250 million meals a year. And that leads into the why sustainability question. When you have that much of an impact, both on the health of the people that you are catering to, quite literally, as well as that much purchasing power and the impacts that those purchasing decisions can make on the environment and your communities, you quickly get to caring about sustainability, wanting to make the world a better place through those purchases and through those 250 million meals served.
So give me, based on your experience, give me your overall assessment of how food and beverage has done with being more sustainable within the last decade or two. I mean, I'm sure the answer is they've done a good job, but maybe there's areas in which, you know, they could do better, in your opinion, having been around it for as long as you have.
Well, I think food and beverage encompasses such a diverse set of products and companies and scales. So it's really hard to say how singularly food and beverage has done. That said, I think that there has been incredible innovation and care that many companies have put into the impacts of their choices in the food and beverage industry. And we've got big companies that care about these issues as well as small, which is really cool. And we have a long way to go. There is a maybe real and maybe perceived pressure to have cheap food for people that can sometimes seem counter to sustainability. So it's a very broad question, and I'd give food and beverage a mixed report card.
So along those lines, drilling down a little bit more, looking at all the different things that being sustainable and initiatives that a company can take on, what has been in recent times maybe the most impressive changes you've seen overall?
Some of the actions that stand out as impressive to me are things like Purdue Chicken eliminating antibiotics from all of their production houses. So using antibiotics to raise farm animals has contributed to what the World Health Organization has called a global health crisis. A company like Purdue, which operates at a rather large scale, taking antibiotics out of their system is an important step both to solving that health crisis and also to proving that it can be done at scale, which is really critical. So no longer can any producer say, well, we can't do that. We have too many chickens. It costs Purdue money. It took a lot of time and effort, and it eliminated kind of a safety net that antibiotics had provided. And so that's one that stands out for me. Another glimmer of hope or highlight are the number of meat companies that have invested in alternative proteins and are actually rebranding themselves away from being meat specific to being protein specific. Animal agriculture is a huge contributor to climate change, and to relook at how we fuel and nourish our bodies and say we're after protein, whether it comes from an animal or if it comes from a plant, and what's the more sustainable path, I think is also a highlight of the last decade.
Let's shift gears a little bit and get into the topic I really wanted to dig into, which is this concept of greenwashing. And we see, you know, here on food processing, we get release upon release upon release about sustainability initiatives and, you know, environmental commitments and things like that. And it's our job, I guess, you know, not just in the media, but as consumers as well, to follow up and hold these companies to their commitments. And, you know, we get plenty of releases that celebrate actually meeting those commitments too. So it's not entirely just say and never follow through. Talk about greenwashing from your perspective. What are the signs of it? How would you define it? It's not as broad-based necessarily as sustainability as a term, but talk to our listeners a little bit about greenwashing and what it is and what to watch out for.
Well, greenwashing is putting forth an appearance of doing something green or more sustainable without actually making a change that is green or more sustainable. And one of the first questions I ask when I see those releases myself is the company addressing their fundamental business, or is what they're doing kind of window dressing? For example, there's a large transportation company that was talking a lot about their reduction of water use. And when I dug into it, they were talking about water used to wash their trucks. And yes, that should be looked into for sure. And with water being a precious resource, water should be used wisely. But if you're a transportation company and your headline from your sustainability report is about water reduction and washing your trucks, and you're not talking about the impacts of having thousands of trucks driving literally millions of miles every year, then that is greenwashing. That is sending out a red herring of sorts. Not fundamentally addressing your actual product. That's one form of greenwashing. Another, you talked about people talking about their commitments. There's always a lot of hubbub and press releases around making a commitment to reducing carbon emissions, a commitment around reducing sodium maybe, or sugar, or about local purchasing, increasing spend with diverse suppliers. Lots of fufara around making the commitment. Is there as much attention paid to measuring the commitment and reporting out success, or more importantly, in avoiding greenwashing, failure? And I talk about that in my book, You Can't Market Manure at Lunchtime, that at Bon Appetit, when we missed our commitment to eliminating gestation crates from our supply chain for pork, not only did I call the Humane Society and tell them that I missed the commitment, I also put out a press release. Now, in reality, did anybody write about that press release? No. But it sat on our website as proof that we were being transparent. And therefore, when we made claims that we did achieve something, you could believe it even more, because when we didn't achieve it, we were transparent about it. Even when it's really uncomfortable to admit that you fell short, that's the time you know that you have to be the most transparent. And in return, your customers are going to understand if you partner that honesty with a plan to move forward and keep the commitment. What your customers, be it the public or another business, if you're in a B2B industry, as many of your listeners are, and as we were at Bon Appetit, what your customers want is to be able to trust you and know that you're continuing on the path. Of course, they're going to understand if you stumble. That's not where greenwashing comes in. Greenwashing comes in when you pretend otherwise.
Well, and to your point about the commitments, right, and maybe falling short of your goal, you still continue along that path and still try to, you know, meet that goal just further along down the line. You don't just say, well, we didn't meet the goal in the time we said, so we're done with that initiative, right? I would imagine that also goes into it.
Absolutely. For the book, I interviewed Josh Balk, who is the founder of an organization called Accountability Board. They literally exist to hold companies accountable to their sustainability commitments at the board level. And I asked him how he knew companies were greenwashing and what they should do when they fall short. And he said that he knew companies were greenwashing when there was lots of inspirational and lofty talk on their websites, but no actual plan in place to meet them. And that if anybody was proactive and came to him saying that their company had fallen short, but again, had a plan in place, that he would celebrate that versus criticize them. And in fact, if a company came forward and said that they had fallen short and they didn't know how to move forward, he would himself give them ideas, but then follow up to see if they tried out those ideas. And if they did, he celebrated that effort, even if imperfect. If they didn't, that's when he starts filing shareholder resolutions.
It's funny, while you're talking, I'm thinking of some of the things I've seen over the years, and one incident comes to mind from when I was at a previous publication. And I remember there was a beer company a couple years ago that ran a Super Bowl ad where they were going to convert X amount of acreage, farmland acreage, to organic for every six pack that was purchased. And the people I was watching the Super Bowl with thought that was a really cool idea. And I sat there and thought, yeah, it does sound pretty cool. It's a nice initiative. And then in the next week, you know, I thought about it a little more and said, wait a minute, somebody has to have done the math here to figure out if this is really going to make an impact or not. And I only bring this up because I don't know if it ever was thought to be greenwashing, but it turned out that somebody did do the math, and it was a ridiculous amount of six packs that the world had to buy in order to really make a dent in agriculture being more organic. And the question I have, I guess, kind of relating to that, was it never came out that, like, you know, that beer company just had these lofty ideas, or they were trying to pull a fast one by people and make it sound, you know, sound better than it was. But is it possible to greenwash by accident? you know, kind of go to the buffet table with an empty stomach, put way more on your plate, and then oops, we promised too much.
It's absolutely possible to greenwash by accident. I think that you get at a really important point about doing the math. So it'd be nice to think that any company making a commitment knows exactly how they're going to meet that commitment, that they've done the math, that they have the budget, that they have the suppliers all lined up, and the plan is just ready to be executed. In reality, especially if you're trying to create a brand based upon sustainability, which is the thesis of my book, that you can get market credit and actually be more profitable by being more sustainable. If you want to be a leader, you're going to have to act fast in some cases, and you're going to have to do things first. And if you're acting quickly, and if you're trying to do something that's never been done before, there's a high probability of failure, or at least of a setback. And if you stop there, then you are probably unintentionally greenwashing. You've made this commitment. It sounded great. You tried, but you didn't quite get there. Not because you weren't sincere, but because it was harder than you thought. And then you stop. And then you've left yourself open to being accused of greenwashing. It's a natural outcome of leadership in some ways, except that you can avoid it by, when you hit that inevitable roadblock, when it's harder than you thought, redoubling your efforts, extending your timeline publicly, owning those challenges. And at the end, you might even get more market credit because it was harder. People will appreciate the efforts you went through.
How does a processor, a food company, a beverage company come up with these goals, commitments, initiatives, and execute them, but not get derailed by external factors? For example, you know, let's just say, you know, one of the things I've heard from processors in the past year or two is so many of the recycle and reuse structures, infrastructures are not in place. And yes, we can create fully recyclable and compostable packaging, but the consumer doesn't know how to follow through on that. So, you know, is it the processor's fault? Is it, how do they navigate those types of challenges?
The issue of packaging that you raise is a great example of what could be considered unintentional greenwashing, or maybe intentional. But as you point out, talking about something being compostable, if there isn't actually a way to compost it, could be considered greenwashing. We ran into that again and again at Bon Appetit, being in 33 states across hundreds of municipalities, each with a different waste stream capabilities. And what I decided to do was to instead focus on getting the most sustainable packaging I could at the point I was buying it. So for us, that meant the highest percent of post-consumer fibers, because it was really hard for me to control what happened to our product after it left the cafe, but I could control what I bought that came into the cafe. And in that case, it's maybe not as sexy and maybe feels like you're failing because you aren't offering something compostable or what seems like would be the gold standard. And so it becomes an education task in educating your customer about why what you're doing is actually the more sustainable choice.
So you mentioned, you know, telling the story and conveying the message. How are processors doing with regard to that? Are they telling the right people the right things and controlling the message the way that they should? Or is there still some education that needs to be done on how to educate the consumers and the customers on the sustainability efforts that they are doing? We've got these giant, you know, CSRs and things like that, these reports sustainability reports, things like that, that come out. And I can't imagine that there's a lot of consumers, let alone customers, that go through and read these 100-page things. So what can processors be doing better on the communications front?
I think it's time for processors to come out of the shadows and start bragging about the great things that they're doing directly to their customers. And in many cases, the customer is going to be another business, not necessarily the general public. But I would have been thrilled, for example, if the meat processing company came to the table with the producer. So in many cases in the meat supply chain, there's somebody raising the animals and there's somebody else processing and packaging the animal. And I was always having a conversation with the company raising the animals, but I'd like to know a lot more about that middle piece, especially around their employment practices and the sustainability of their plants. So I think that there's a great story to be told. It's probably not, as you say, in CSR reports, because the customer, in this case, me as the purchaser at Bon Appetit Management Company, might not even know who the processor is. So I don't know to look at the report, but if they asked to be part of the conversation, I think they'd be welcomed.
Looking kind of into your crystal ball a little bit, and obviously if we all knew what was going to happen, we'd be filthy rich and we wouldn't even be recording this podcast episode. but just looking into it, it seems like every couple months a company unveils an initiative for sustainability that, you know, nobody heard of before. Like, we're going to chase after, you know, net zero carbon or whatever it is, or greenhouse gas emissions or whatever it is. Obviously, those exist now. But what has you excited or kind of interested to see moving forward that processors, you know, can focus on when it comes to sustainability? Is there any area of operations or logistics or whatever that is really just has untapped potential for these companies to make an impact that maybe they're not already making an impact in?
Well, first of all, I'm excited to see how everybody lives up to their net zero commitments. There's a lot of commitments out there that are going to come due in 2030, and I don't think we know how almost anyone's going to actually meet them. So I'm excited just about what's already been promised becoming a reality. In terms of what hasn't been promised, I would really love to see more processors and the industry in general make some commitments on the human side around how workers are treated, how manufacturing lines are set up, and the impact of the repetitive motion, as well as the speed on people's bodies, on shift work, especially overnight shifts, and how that impacts people. I'd love to see more focus on the human side of the supply chain. And also, I think we're going to get into water printing the way we are carbon printing now. We're going to start talking about the water impacts. And processors play a big role in that, both in the products and the embodied water in a product, but also in the very necessary cleaning of lines and how efficiently that's done with water.
Yeah, to your point, Maisie, it's been very interesting. You know, you've mentioned a few meat and poultry processors and initiatives and things like that over time here. That's my background. The publication I used to work for covered that industry specifically, and it's been very interesting to see the water conservation efforts of different companies, certain companies. And we just had our Green Plant of the Year in the fall, and the water conservation efforts that they've done at one of their plants have been pretty interesting and impressive. But, you know, coming from that industry, I will say there is kind of an assumption that, well, we need water. to run these operations, to clean these operations, to do all of these things. And yeah, to that point, it's like, at some point, we're going to have to really cut down on the use of water somehow. So I agree with you on that, in terms of just being curious to see what comes down the road. And to your point about the net zero, yeah, exactly. There's so many companies out there that have made these commitments. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see who gets there, when and how. And yeah, and especially with some of the really big companies, how they end up tracking it and things like that, be very interesting.
Just to reiterate that I think that that middle piece of the supply chain that represents so many of your listeners has great potential to make impact when it comes to sustainability, and that it has been a very service-oriented business, and sustainability might be a way to move from your business differentiating itself by always saying yes and always being the fastest and the cheapest, to adding value in a different way by also being the most sustainable. And that that could be a business selling point for you.
Maisie, thanks so much again for your time. Tell our listeners about this book really quickly that you're publishing. Tell them where they can get it. Just a little snippet of what it's about.
You Can't Market Manure at Lunchtime and Other Lessons from the Food Industry for Creating a More Sustainable Company is available now on Amazon. It's rooted in my experiences at Bon Appetit, as well as 12 conversations I had with sustainability luminaries, such as Walter Robb, who was co-CEO of Whole Foods Market, Gary Hirschberg, founder of Stonyfield Organic Yogurts, Roma McKeag from Clif Bar & Company. And it's a practical how-to guide to making your company more sustainable and getting market credit for having done so.
For everyone listening in today to our Food for Thought podcast, thanks for tuning into this episode. You can find more of our podcasts at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and just about anywhere you can find podcasts. Stay tuned for more episodes in the future, and have a great day.